It's time for The Car Doctor on AM 950 WROL. Got a car question? Call us at 617-770-3030. That's 617-770-3030. Now, here's The Car Doctor, John Paul, on AM 950 WROL, the spirit of Boston.
And good Saturday morning, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Car Doctor program on AM 950 WROL, the spirit of Boston. My name's John Paul, the Car Doctor, here to help you with your car problems. And before we get going this morning, I just want to say thank you to one of our listeners. And actually, I was up at the Tewksbury Library this week, and I gave a little talk up at the library, and Rich Olson and his wife were there, and I helped... came up with an answer to a problem he was having with his car, and he was nice enough to come to the presentation and also gave me a bottle of wine. So thanks for that. So it was always nice to meet our listeners in person and talk to them and find out what's going on with them and all of that. So that's always good. So. A little bit later on, we're going to be talking about the car I was driving around last week, which is the Volkswagen Jetta, the GLI, and we're also going to talk about some of the other news we've been hearing about in the automotive industry. We'll talk about that coming up as well. And down in Rhode Island, the Newport Car Museum, dads are free on Father's Day. So if you haven't been to the Newport Car Museum, you need to check it out. Oddly enough, the Newport Car Museum is not in Newport. It's in the next town over. But it is a great take, and dads are free on Father's Day at the Newport Car Museum. It's actually in Portsmouth, Rhode Island. But there are about 75 cars there now. That's 10 more than I was there the last time I was there. And interesting, they're all owned by the same guy. They're all owned by Gunther. I'm not sure even his wife knows how many cars he actually owns. I asked her, and she kind of looked at me and said, he doesn't really tell me the entire story about how many cars we have. But it's her museum, too. I mean, she set it up in her way. She said, I don't want to smell oil and gas when I walk in. I want this to be more of an art museum than a car museum, although you can get right. It's not like you can't get next to the cars. And then they have these events, like they have Hoods Up Day, where the hoods are up, and you can check it all out. So a lot of good stuff going on down in, technically Portsmouth, even though it's called the Newport Car Museum. With us on the phone is Joe Hearn. He is the CEO of ARS, Advanced Remarketing Services. And you might say, well, how does that have anything to do with cars? Well, we'll ask Joe and find out. Joe, good morning, and welcome back to the Car Doctor program.
Morning, John. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so the name of your company doesn't fully describe it to, I think, somebody who just kind of stumbled across it. Can you tell us what it's all about?
Yeah, so the term remarketing actually refers to the wholesale transfer of automobiles. And it's a term that's been around forever, but it's really an insider's term. It's really only relevant to people in the wholesale industry. So if you're in the auction business, or if you're in the leasing or finance business and the dealer business, you have a sense of what the term remarketing is. Actually, for a brief period, that term got co-opted by the internet search industry, and they were using it for a little while with actually some success. So now there's some confusion about what the term remarketing is. Sometimes people think we're a digital search agency, but no, we're focused on automobiles. But our particular focus is unique in that we're really focused in mostly in older vehicles.
You're sort of really focused in the kind of end of life of cars, right? Cars that have,
they've sort of lived
their usefulness in one way or another, either because of they've been totaled or they're just gotten old, right?
Right, absolutely. I'm in some regards a junk guy for sure. It kind of goes outside of people's attention what the end of the automobile story looks like in the United States, right? Every year we buy and consume around 17 million new cars, and then we retire or recycle around 12 million. And that 12 million that gets recycled is where our focus is. Cars that are really at the end of their useful life, either due to you know age, use, or damage. But business is good. There's never been more older vehicles on U.S. roadways than there are now. Cars 16 years and older are the fastest growing segment in vehicles in operation. So our focus, while kind of out of a lot of people's attention, is still a big part of the automobile story for sure.
Yeah, I was reading something the other day, and it talked about sort of the end of the automobile industry because sales are off, and apparently it's affected the gross national product by 2% or something. And yeah. I don't see how it should be a surprise to anybody that when the economy crashed in 07, 08, people stopped buying cars for a bunch of years, and a couple of years ago they had the sort of peak of car buying, and now it's sort of leveled off. But I don't know how anybody would have been surprised by that. People were deferring new car purchases, and then all of a sudden they bought new cars, and car sales spiked, and now they're sort of finding their spot to be. But you're absolutely right. You know, cars are as old as they've ever been on the road. They're lasting, you know, 200,000-300,000 miles. I gave a talk this week on Wednesday night at a library up in Tewksbury, Massachusetts, and there was a couple there, and his truck had 395,000 miles on it, and his wife's SUV had 275,000 miles on it. So vehicles are lasting a really long time, but eventually they wear out, and or they get into car crashes, and that's sort of where you come along. And it's interesting, you said you're a junk guy, but you don't own a junkyard or have a car auction.
That's right. That's right. We essentially broker, we're not the classic recycling parts and operation. And those the junk term gets kind of wildly overused. Anyways, I'm proud to be part of that junker story. But at the same time, you're talking about sophisticated recycling operations. The automobile is the most heavily recycled consumer product. The people in the business of recycling automobiles right now are absolute true professionals. I mean, there's still some people who operate without the appropriate kind of regard for the environment, their responsibility towards it. But for the most part, the industry is actually quite impressive in their approach. But for us, you're right. We're not a typical junkyard. We sell more cars directly to those operations nationally than essentially anyone outside of the what is essentially the traditional, as you mentioned, auction channel. We're selling those cars to their useful end of life through a bunch of different verticals as early as possible.
Yeah, you mentioned, you know, how automobiles was heavily recycled. Make a long story short, I was trying to do a video yesterday, which I was a disaster, but it had to do with battery recycling. And as part of it, you know, part of the kind of the tips we were talking about or things we were talking about were, you know, car batteries get recycled more than plastic, glass bottles, aluminum cans. Car batteries are nearly 100% recycling. In fact, most old car batteries become new car batteries. And you look at that, and that's just one segment of what happens inside a car. I have a couple of questions. First off, there are people that have a car that, you know, maybe it's been sitting in their yard. Maybe it's a car that belonged to a relative, and maybe they passed away, and they're trying to figure out what to do with it. And there are a lot of charities that people can donate cars to, and there's a lot of charities there's a lot of companies that sound like charities, but they're not. How does your company help and identify, and who do you guys work with?
Yeah, so this is something that we're incredibly proud of. We run what has become the National Vehicle Donation Programs for a lot of the nation's top charities, including Habitat for Humanity, American Cancer Society, U.S. Fund for UNICEF, PATH, the Arthritis Foundation, March of Dimes, all charities that you know what their work in the community means to the community, right? Mm-hmm. There's no question about what the American Cancer Society does with their dollars. There's no question about what Habitat does with their dollars. And we have raised about $175 million for those charities through car donations to fund what is essentially their important work. However, then you have another layer of operations out there, right? And some identify like ARS does as automobile businesses. But unfortunately, what I think is really awful is most now identify as charities. But they're charities that you wouldn't be familiar with their actual work or service. And many actually, use or borrow the names of other very good charities, right? Saying mm-hmm. that this program benefits this radio station or this children's charity or this anything like that. But what essentially happens is the charity is on the receiving end of a lot of private interest. So for us, we've raised $175 million and returned 80% of every gross dollar raised. Every year there's a pretty comprehensive review by the California Attorney General on all sorts of donation programs. And specifically in the Carter Nation program, they publish what is essentially a 75-page report about vehicle donation programs. And ours is and has been for almost a 10-year period the number one program at that 80% threshold. However, there's virtually nothing close. As a matter of fact, the average that goes back to charity in the state of California, and as you know, California automotive, they're almost one in every 10 cars in the U.S. is registered in California.
Right.
But the average going back to charity is around 34%.
Oh,
where ARS is over double that.
Mm.
And then in an even more obnoxious feature of this is while that reporting is something we are proud to do every year, the operations that quote unquote operate as charities aren't even compelled to report because you know what the reporting is really focuses on professional fundraisers and their stance is, well, we're not a fundraiser, we're a charity. So it should come to no one's surprise that in the automobile business there is just a ton of opportunists and shady operations. I mean, we've had that the industry's had that black eye, kind of deservedly so, since day one. But it's especially discouraging for the charities, for the donors specifically, who think that they're donating to a Cars for Kids program, but there's no kid involved, right? There's just a lot of press processors, or even in some cases, religious charities that actually masquerade to be something else. That's why we tend to only work with that kind of the organizations that you know and trust, and they entrust their brand to us.
Yeah,
which is something we're super proud of. Go ahead.
And the website, your website helps steer people in those directions too, right?
Sure, absolutely. Yep. It's linked to the charities directly and to the programs we favor. Like, again, we're proud partners, and you know these guys with the Car Talk Vehicle Donation Program, yep. and have been for a long time. And if you donate through the Car Talk Vehicle Donation Program, you can know that that money is actually getting back to support the programs and services of the stations, where if you donate through any of the other myriad of alternatives, you can basically be guaranteed that a lower ratio of your value would go to the stations. And it's the same as typical of the other charities we work with. So it continues to be a source of pride. We try to behave in a way that is kind of above reproach to provide some level of example of how this business should be run, and really kind of do right by the charities, kind of do right by the donors themselves, and actually run our business, which is focused on end of life vehicles and recycling. Yeah. But yeah, that's something I can talk about. I can talk about the car donation industry at length. We can talk about some changing donor behaviors with the market. Something we enjoy a lot.
Yeah. That's a good point. You know, I've had people call me up before and say, I want to donate my car to somebody. Who can I do that with? And I'll say to people, well, what's a charity that kind of reflects your own values? You know, if you want to donate to Habitat for Humanity because you think it's a great organization, kind of that's what you do. If you want to donate to Car Talk on NPR because you really enjoy, listening to the heritage shows of Car Talk, go ahead and do that because you know it helps support NPR. But, you know, some people just they just want to get rid of a car in their yard, and that's all they care about. Can they contact your company directly and just, you know, call the office and say, hey, I have a car, and can you guys come and get it?
Always. And we will give you examples of the charities we work with and try to connect you with a program where you can be confident that the money is going to go back to support the programs and services. You can find us very easily on the web. Our car donation services are at Car Donation Wizard. It's cardonationwizard.com. And what that is really a front page that shows you all the great charities that we work with. You could call our offices at 877-709-2277 and we'll connect you to a donation program that works for you. But you'll see, if you get to those pages, that there's a lot of choice, and there's a lot of information there. There's a lot of information about automobile recycling. We have a great resource of information about signing your title number. We have Spanish language videos to help people. We have state levels. If you're in Massachusetts or in Texas, you'll find videos that will help you execute your title correctly, which is another very important point. As you well know, some of these donation programs encourage the donor just to leave the title blank, right? We'll pick up your car, just leave the title in the glove box, and come back and get your car. I cannot stress enough that is such an awful idea. You would never do that with you would never just leave your title with your car with the keys and the title just on the side of the road for just any Tom, Dick, or Harry to come pick up. I tell that every single vehicle that we handle, the vehicle is signed over to us as agent for the charity. And I continue to try and bang that gong as long as possible. Please don't do that. You open yourself to just so much liability.
It makes sense. But, Dennis, my producer, is a multimillionaire. He has a car at home, and because of his incredible tax bracket, he's in.
I am not a multimillionaire.
For example. But he wants to donate a car to a charity, but he also wants to get, the maximum charitable deduction out of it because it's a... it's an Aston Martin Lagonda, and he happens to just have one, and he wants to donate it to a charity. Can you help him maximize the donation amount through your ability to sell that car?
Yeah, absolutely. Because our focus on these vehicles allows us to kind of identify the value opportunity, and so we're triaging through a lot of information all the time to identify where there's the best channel to sell the vehicle. So the Lagonda is just going to have a couple different outlets and a finite number of potential buyers. But in the alternative case, if we're talking about a 10-year-old Honda or a 16-year-old Honda, or two side-by-side 16-year-old Hondas, one that's been relatively well went to college with the third kid, right? We're trying to identify the best channel to sell all those vehicles to maximize that deduction for the donor and to get the highest return possible back for the organization. In some cases, the organization might have a use for the vehicle, and that changes the tax deductibility completely. Mm-hmm. So, there's occasions when we'll take a large truck or a box truck or even a light truck or SUV for Habitat, and they can actually put that into their mission. And we'll try to connect the organization with the vehicle to kind of advance their use there. Mm. But not every vehicle qualifies. Certainly they don't need a lot of vehicles that are headed toward the end of their useful life. They don't need the headache that's in your driveway.
Yeah.
To start breaking down for them when they're trying to get their job site. So we help them make those decisions as well. We work with some museums that are trying to identify vehicles that are collection quality. Like, there's a lot. There's just so many different variables to the donation process. But at the end of it, when it comes to our system, the donor and the charity are always considered first.
Hmm. And so. do you work directly with insurance companies as well? Do you have insurance companies? You know, AAA in Rhode Island now has just gone from being an insurance broker to an insurance company. And right. when those are members, vehicles end up getting totaled, do you work with insurance companies directly to get rid of those, to get those total vehicles into the hands of recyclers so they can get recycled again?
Yeah, we absolutely do. So that that process, again, goes through a several step phases to be able to identify that low value and end of life vehicle. So that vehicle that 16 year old vehicle that we've talked about, that's mm-hmm. the fastest growing segment on the roadways, is going to get into accidents, right? Collision rates went back up in the age of the, they went down for a while, and then with the drift, they went down for a while with some of the safety measures, and then go up against the distracted driving. But, cars are running into each other. Mm-hmm. And when those older cars running into each other, there's a very high likelihood they won't be repaired.
Yep.
So of all the reported damage, around 80% actually go to a repair channel and 20% go to this salvage channel. But for the oldest value salvage units, we sell those directly to the licensed dismantlers and recyclers mm-hmm. on behalf of insurance companies all throughout the United States.
And the newer vehicle, the 2-year-old vehicle that just got hit so badly that, all the airbags went off and the body's bent and it can't help. You do the same thing.
Well, the newer vehicle actually goes through a little bit different funnel, right? Because the newer vehicle has residual parts value that really needs to be kind of handled in a little bit different. Mm-hmm. Our focus stays on those older vehicles pretty much exclusively everywhere, where the newer vehicles are more likely going to have a little bit longer claim process, a little different estimatics process, and then are probably going to be presented to auction sale through a salvage auction.
Okay.
And interestingly enough, about one out of every five of those cars will end up sold into an international market, right? Mm-hmm. So late model insurance salvage is actually distributed globally for parts. It's a very interesting segment.
Well, it sounds like there's plenty more to talk about, but it's Saturday morning, and congratulations. You just had a baby, so you're probably busy.
I do.
Yeah, so congratulations.
Five weeks. Thanks very much.
Yeah, and the other thing, when I was doing something, I think I Googled you. Did anyone ever say that you could be a doppelganger for the guys in Property Brothers?
What's so funny is, like, I feel like I have a generic face. This is funny. I've gone through stages of being like, hey, you kind of look like this guy, and lately that's the one, which is complimentary. Some of them aren't as complimentary over time, but that's funny.
There you go. Hey, Joe, thanks for taking some time out of your Saturday morning to join us one more time. With the website, it's carddonationwizard.com, right?
Right, and that all connects you to a bunch of terrific charities.
All right, perfect. All right, thanks, Joe. We'll talk soon.
John, thanks so much.
All right, take care.
Fun.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Why don't we take a break, if you're ready? I'm ready. Yeah, I can sip some coffee and, all of that. We need to take a break, pay some bills. My name's John Paul. This is a Car Doctor program. You're listening on AM 950 WROL, the Spirit of Boston, 100.3 FM, or maybe you hit up the app and went to WROLradio.com. You went to the App Store. Maybe you're listening on TuneIn, iHeartRadio. We're all over the place now. We'll be right back. But let me introduce my new Rocket 88. Yes, it's straight, just one way. Everybody likes my Rocket. Forget about your Hemis and your GTOs. I've got a new machine, and she really goes. When I pass you on the back strip, you'll know darn well. Been beaten by a porcupine, V8 Chevelle. Jacking it up now, you better be quick. And welcome back to the Car Doctor program on AM 950 WROL, the Spirit of Boston. So I was mentioning it to Dennis, and I mentioned it a little bit about a recycling video that I was doing this week, yesterday. And here's in essence what it was supposed to be. I was supposed to say, "Hi, I'm John Paul, AAA's Car Doctor. Did you know that nearly 100% of a car battery gets recycled? In fact, the battery itself can turns into electronics equipment, construction equipment, and even turns into new batteries. The case itself gets recycled. Every battery case comes from recycled plastics. But it's still important to make sure the batteries get recycled because 2 million batteries a year get disposed of improperly. And when that happens, the heavy metals inside a battery and other contaminants contaminate the soil and the groundwater. So it's up to our part to make sure that batteries get recycled properly. And if you buy a battery from us, we're going to make sure it goes back to the battery factory and it gets recycled properly. If you have an old battery sitting around your house, you can go to any one of our AAA-approved auto repair facilities, and they can make sure it gets recycled properly. And if you don't know where a AAA-approved auto repair facility is, go to AAA.com/auto repair, and you can find one near you. It's important for all of us to make sure that we take care of the environment we live in. Basically, that's what I needed to say. I couldn't say my name half the time. We were outside when we were doing it. Oddly enough, next to a tree stump with a battery on top of it. A little bit of, you know, kind of a prop. I just stumbled over it. But basically what I just said then is what I was supposed to say. Almost 2 hours later, I still wasn't happy with the way it came up. It was just a tough day. So, and then the interesting part at the end, and nobody said anything, so maybe it didn't happen. Apparently, my pants weren't zipped. Which, what I told Dennis that earlier, I thought he was going to cry. Now, perhaps my zipper just broke as I got back into my car, and I do not know. But, you know, there was Gwen, Caitlin, Jordan, Javier. Maybe that's all. Maybe there's just the four of them. Nobody mentioned anything until I get back to work. Nothing other than laughter. Is that all you got?
That's all I got. I can't think right now.
All righty then. Well, I want to talk about the car that got me around part of last week, and that was the Volkswagen Jetta GLI. It's the high-performance version of the standard four-door Jetta. When introduced, Volkswagen called the Jetta GLI a GTI with a trunk. The GLI comes in three trim levels, the S, the Autobahn, and the 35th Anniversary Edition. The GLI is powered by a 228-horsepower turbocharged 2-liter engine. Horsepower is up by 18, and torque has been increased by 51 foot-pounds over previous models. The engine can be paired with a 6-speed manual or 7-speed dual clutch transmission. Our road test GLIS was paired with the DSG, which is a terminology for the an automatic transmission that's really a manual transmission with two clutches in it. So it shifts sort of very specifically like a manual, but for people that don't know how to use a clutch, doesn't have one. It's all done magically. The interior of the Jetta is typical Volkswagen high-quality materials used throughout with the solid-feeling switches and buttons. The front seats are supported with good bolstering, but at least for me, and this is typical of the Jetta GLI and the Golf GTI, it takes me a while to find a comfortable position because the seats are sort of overly firm and have good support to keep you from rolling out of them. I just play with the adjustments, as opposed to our Volkswagen Beetle. I get in, I sit in a seat, and it feels comfortable. But the more performance-oriented seats take me a little while to get used to. There are a couple of cup holders, a smallish glove compartment, a decent-sized center console. The rear seat can accommodate three, but it's better suited to two, like most cars of this size. The trunk is good size at 14 cubic feet. It's got a large opening to accommodate bulky items. Surprisingly, actually, how big the trunk is. The GLI offers a number of premium features as standard equipment. These include keyless entry, push-button start, automatic on-off headlights, rain-sensing wipers, automatically dimming rearview mirror, dual-zone automatic climate control, as well as heated seats. Out on the road, the GLI performs well. Performance from a standing stop or passing slow-moving vehicle is effortless. The extra torque, as compared to previous models, gives the Jetta a more powerful feel than its horsepower numbers would tell. When shifting into sport mode, there's a pleasant exhaust note. I still don't know if it comes from the engine or the stereo system, though. BMW does that. You push the sport mode, and all of a sudden it sounds, but it's actually coming through the subwoofer. So it sort of fools you. Ford used to do it. They used to take an air tube that came from the intake of the engine and put it inside the car. So when you stepped on the accelerator, you heard whoosh. But it was actually just a funnel-ish kind of thing that made noise. But anyway, it does sound a little bit sportier. There's actually four driving modes. A driver can select between normal, sport, eco, and custom. Custom just allows you to, you know, make the suspension a little different, steering a little different. Normal mode gives a nice balanced experience, while sport mode is tuned for more dynamic throttle and shift response, tighter steering, and a more spirited exhaust note. Eco mode optimizes shift points, throttle response, and climate control setting. So when I'm out in the highway commuting 50 miles each way to work, I'm in eco mode trying to maximize my fuel economy. The ride is a bit firm and potholes can be a bit jarring, but overall the Jetta never loses its composure and does make for a comfortable commuting car. The steering is as good as more expensive sports sedans, and the chunky leather-wrapped steering wheel just kind of adds to the sporty feel. The brakes, which are larger than on the standard Jetta, complement the rest of the car. They are powerful, easily pulling the Jetta GLI to a quick and controlled stop. Safety is addressed with a comprehensive suite of driver assistance. Technology standard features include forward collision warning, autonomous emergency braking, blind spot monitor, and rear traffic alert. The Volkswagen Jetta GLI proves that a moderate price sedan can get decent fuel economy, ride well, and be really fun to drive. So a nice car, a fun car to drive. And it was sort of interesting. When I was in Florida, I had a GTI, so the Jetta equivalent, without the trunk. And I like the GTI a lot. I like the idea of a hatchback. But Volkswagen's kind of up in the air what they're going to do with Golfs and Jettas right now. It sounds like they may not keep them around for that long. Or if they do, they're just going to keep the premium versions of them. So the idea of maybe a $20,000 Jetta or a $20,000 Golf may start to go away. Time will tell.
All right. I got to start talking about something that's been bothering me for a few weeks. The bait and switch.
You mean at Best Buy?
No.
No?
Okay. No, no, right. No. With car dealerships. So before Memorial Day, all the Memorial Day sales were out. And there was one particular place that was advertising a Jeep.
Yep.
And if you put it one price, they specifically said there's one price for like $79 a month. Lease, but you have to put down $4,000 or $39.95, whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
But then there was another price for like $119 a month.
Mm-hmm.
It's at zero down.
Zero down.
Zero
How
down.
How can that be?
Exactly. So I reached out and I was like, "So is it truly zero down?" And I was told, "No,
which, no,
of course not." But it still turned out that you still had to put like $4,000 down. And I was like, then what's the point of the zero? Oh, well, no dealership can truly do zero down, which is false because I've done that.
Yeah.
And this, that, and the other thing. And they just started going on and on and on about it. So I'm like, and you also had to still qualify for certain rebates and discounts.
Yeah.
And
yeah, a lot of times I know what happens is when they do some of the advertised prices, they roll in every single, you have to be a veteran, a college, recent college graduate, turning in a similar vehicle, which has, if you're turning in a Chevy to get another Chevy, there's an advantage there. If you're turning a competitor car, maybe there's something with that. and they just pile them all together, and you walk in and you're like, yeah, I want to get that car, and I see there's all these incentives. And they're like, well, did you just graduate from college? No. Did you? Are you a veteran? No. Do you have a Maserati to turn in? No. Well, then you don't qualify for anything.
Right.
Well, nobody does. You know, so, yeah.
Just advertise the price, man. Just advertise the price.
Well, you heard Joe in the interview say that, you know, talk about shady car donations, and, you know, the automotive industry, you know, has a reputation sometimes, and they do. Mm-hmm. I remember years ago, and I've told this story a couple times, about when I was shopping for my old Hyundai, and I went to a local Hyundai dealer, and I had my car I was going to turn in, which was 5 years old, and they wanted to see the car, and I said, oh, that's fine. And I sent them an email. I saw their ad somewhere, sent them an email, and it was right in the price range that I wanted to pay. And I got there, and they said, well, let me show you this car. And I said, well, I don't want to see that car, because that car is $30,000, and I want to see the $22,000 car. And they're like, well, let me show you this one. Similar. I said, no, I want to see the other one. And we went back and forth for 45 minutes. Until they finally admitted they didn't have any of the other ones. They were never going to get any of the other ones. And the sales manager came out at one point and said to me, well, I don't know what you do for a living, but our job is to make money. And I said, apparently your job is to lie to your customers about what you have in stock to try to get them in the door and beat them to death until they finally agree to buy a car for whatever the price is that you have it. And he was like, well, you know, it's you know, we can't have all these employees and not sell cars. I said, you might sell more cars if you were more honest about it. And then when I went to leave, they wouldn't let me out. I mean, they literally blocked the door. So I sort of backed into the sales guy, sort of pushed him through the door. And then all his guys went outside, and they're standing in front of my car. And then at that point, I'm just kind of laughing. I'm just like, this is hilarious, you know. And when we were done, he gave me a card, and he was willing to sell me the 30-some-odd thousand-dollar car for the price that I wanted. And he said to me, well, you know, I'll give you that car for this price, which I didn't really believe would really happen. And I said, no. And he said, well, why won't you do it now? I said, because you tried to take advantage of me for $10,000. And I can't do business with somebody who would do that. So, yeah, there's, unfortunately, that's still out there. And that's what when I bought my wife's Volkswagen, I went to a little small Volkswagen dealer, Paul Clark Volkswagen in Brockton. And I went in, and Paul Clark was there, who, junior, I guess, because his father started the business a million years ago. And I went in and I said, what's your best deal? What's a good deal on the car? And I think I went through True Car back then. So I had an idea what they would sell the car for. And it was about there. And I said, yeah, that's reasonable. And we negotiated just a little bit, 5 minutes. In fact, he came over at one point, and the sales guy is saying something. And I said, yeah, you need to come down a couple $100. And he looks at it and goes, eh, okay. And when we're doing the paperwork, he came back over and I said, I think I got a reasonably good price. Are you happy that you made a little bit of money? And he went, yeah. I said, so you sold a convertible. I'm happy. And he goes, yeah. He says, it doesn't have to be that hot. And when I bought the Hyundai, I bought it from Prime Hyundai in Rockland. So big, huge. In fact, Hyundai, Prime now is bigger than Herb Chambers, sales-wise. They have more dealerships, and they sell more cars than Herb Chambers does. And when I went in there, I went in with the AAA car buying program, which is technically True Car. But I went in there, and I also had the the Hyundai friends and family discount, which turned out the car buying program was actually cheaper than the friends and family discount by like $100. Not a lot, but $100. So I went in there, and the only way they sort of, what I was not happy about with that was they had a really big documentation fee. It was like $500. And I tried my best to negotiate my way around it. They just wouldn't budge on it. I finally did a little bit of negotiation on something else, and I got it down, not the dock fee, but I got them to take a little bit of money off the price of the car. So I felt like I was getting some sort of a little bit better deal. But when we did the negotiation at the, or I had to still go meet with the F&I guy. So I sit down with him, and I said, you know, we just started talking. And he's annoyed because it's after 6 o'clock and it's Friday and they want to go home. But I'm talking to him. I said, where'd you work before here? He said, I worked at Prime Infinity in Westwood. I said, oh, do you know Andrew Brock? And he goes, oh, yeah, he was my rep. He was my Infinity rep. And I said, oh, yeah, him, his wife and I worked together a lot with the New England Motor Press. Good guy. And I said, oh, where'd you work before there? And he said, I worked for Copeland Toyota. I said, oh, you know, Pep, the service manager. I said, yeah, you know, Dave, the service manager now. You know, we talked. I said, I bought the car. We're all set. I'm going to pick it up on Monday. Between you and me, what did you make on the car? And he turns his computer around, shows it to me. And he says, this is your sale right here. I said, the one in red? And he said, yeah. And he runs his finger all the way across. And it says, minus $1,190. So I said, you lost $1,100 on the sale? And he said, yeah. I was like, why? And I'm sure somewhere in incentives, they'll probably pick it up. But, you know, when he was there, I looked down at the rest of them. And, you know, there were sales they made $2,000 and $3,000 on. But most of those sales were either through the financing option, through extras like gap insurance, key and wheel insurance, fabric protection, paint, all those extras that they try to sell you sometimes as a add-on to the vehicle. That's where the profit's made. It's not really made in the car sometimes. So, in fact, we sell at AAA, we sell gap insurance. You know, and so if your car gets totaled and it's worth less than what you owe on it, and we make a little bit of money on it, but we sell it for about half of what the car dealers sell it for. We actually have a new program now. It's wheel, tire, key, and paintless dent removal insurance. And I don't know how much it is. I kind of looked at it for my car, and it was about $600 or $700, I guess, for 5 years. And it would cover if you damaged a tire, a wheel, lost your key, or you got a dent in your car, and it could be fixed with paintless dent removal for like $500 or $600, $700, something like that. Probably a third the price the dealer gets for it. And the dealer sells a wheel and tire insurance for like $1,200. We sell wheel, tire, key, and dent insurance for half that. And, you know, you can't pretend you lost a key. Say you have an $800 key to your Mercedes, and you can't say, well, I lost one of my keys, and we'll go get you another key, because they shut off the old key. So you kind of have a problem. As a follow-up to last week, I said something about my wife's Volkswagen. She was stuck in Boston. The key, you couldn't shut the ignition off. I got home, dumped a half a can of, actually it was Royal Purple lubricant. So Royal Purple Oil Company happened to have a spray can of it. Sprayed the lock. I've driven the car 10 times in the last week or so, and it's started up and stopped every time. So hopefully all it was a sticky lock. Somebody asked me to finish up on that. Dennis, you saw an article in the paper about tires without air in them.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's fascinating, but I can definitely, the way that the membrane that they're using looks, I can foresee some big issues with it. And now
like,
they show the
like
car.
Like here in the snow?
hearing the snow and the fact that or even like someone out in Phoenix, Arizona, it's going to dry out. It's going to crack. It's
snakes can live in them.
This is true. Bugs, all kind of bugs, yeah. But here in the snow, if the snow builds up into those things and it's not, and it gets hard because of the cold weather.
It's basically a tire with vanes in it almost, and the vanes sort of support the weight of the vehicle. And GM says they might put them on some cars. And
they are putting them on cars.
Yeah.
But
2021, maybe?
2000, they want to have them on their entire fleet by 2025. And in 2020 or 21, they're putting them on a small car. I can't remember what car.
It's probably a small SUV.
It was a car.
Actual car?
Okay. Yes.
But yeah, kind of an interesting idea. I don't know
if someone gets mad at you, and like, I know they can slash your tire now, but they could literally just put little slits in these membranes all around and you don't know it. Then all of a sudden you're driving down the road.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. One of the other interesting things is, you know, we're road service providers. We provide road service. So if people have tires without air in them, we're not going to – that's one of the number one reasons we go to rescue people is flat tires. Now, granted, there's 300 million cars on the road, and it's going to take a long time before 300 million cars have tires without air in them. Hyundai recently introduced – and they're going to introduce it next year. You are not going to have a key to your car. You're going to have not an app in your phone. Your phone is literally going to be your key. So when you come in – so when you go to your car – and you could get an app in your phone now that you can start your car and unlock it and lock it. But it's tied into having a key. So even if you use your app to start your car, you can't drive away unless you have your key fob in your pocket to be able to do that. It is actually going to be your phone. So your phone is going to be your key. Now, if I lost my key somehow, or I bring my car when I fly out of Boston, I go to pre-flight in Chelsea. I don't know why I go to pre-flight in Chelsea, but that's where I leave my car. They're always nice when I go there, and my car is always there when I come back.
That's always a good thing.
And why on earth I didn't buy a big parking lot near the airport, the guy said to me, I forget the exact number, 5,000 cars in their parking lot, and 2 weekends ago they were full for the entire like 2 week period at $20 a day.
Exactly.
That's a lot of money. So I don't know why I didn't buy a parking lot. But if I said, you know, I don't want my car there the whole time, Dennis, can you go get my car? And you're like, well, I don't have the key. I will send you my key electronically to your phone. And all of a sudden, your phone becomes my key. So you can just walk up to my car, boom, get in, drive away, and you have my car. So it solves that whole I lost my key kind of thing. And as long as you have another phone with that information on it, you can enable another phone to become a key to the car. Now, Thursday night, my phone went dead.
Oops.
I used it all day. I didn't get home till late, and my phone went dead. I don't know what that means for your car. You know, I have a car, and...
Well, I mean, think about it. There's got to be some... There would have to be some other alternate way to get into the car, at least.
They said some sort of, like, almost like a credit card.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, but think about it. When cars first came out, there was no keys. There were crankshafts and push buttons and all that other stuff. Now we're going back to the push button where we are back. Yeah. It's the push button way. But when the key first came about, everybody was like, oh, what happens if you lose the key? What happens if you lose the key? People found ways around it.
Okay. And I guess when you go home you don't go home from work. Well, you kind of do, I guess.
Yeah.
But when you go home,
I'm at home when I'm done with work.
When you go home from work, how many things do you plug in? Do you have a tablet?
I do, but I don't use it. I have actually two tablets.
Okay.
I don't use them.
All right. Do you have a phone?
Yep.
Plug it in? Charge it up?
Yeah. At night, yes.
Yep. Charge up a tablet?
Sure.
Well, if you used it, yep. Charge up your smartwatch?
Yeah, I do.
So I guess you just, one more thing to plug in.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I guess now with, wireless charging, it makes it easier. So, yeah. Push button starting. Two congressmen, maybe, in Massachusetts just filed a bill, a national bill, to require automakers to require cars that have push button start to shut off, because apparently a
couple died recently.
Yeah,
again
in Florida, in yes. Sarasota. But he was a former president of UMass, maybe, or something like that. Yeah, and they did not shut their Lexus off. And they're going to require automakers to come up with some standard to do that.
I don't understand why automakers just don't do it anyways.
Some do. GM and Ford vehicles, if it's an hour or so, or an hour
still,
and a half.
It
but
should
still.
Be a lot less than that.
Yeah.
20 minutes, tops. Tops.
You might want to warm your car up for more than 20 minutes on a cold winter day.
It shouldn't have to be that long.
But you might want to.
But it should be.
Yeah, but it's I don't know if you can, if you left your car running for an hour or an hour and a half, whether that would be enough carbon monoxide to do anything, actually. But I don't know that. But they actually have a system where if it shows the vehicle not moving and it's running and so forth, it'll eventually shut itself off. Yeah, I want automakers to do it. I hate the idea of the government telling them they have to do it, because then all of a sudden there's very specific rules, and the rules take so long to figure out that everybody has to agree with that it never gets done.
Nobody wants regulation, but if the government doesn't do regulation, then as we see here with these push button things, why would companies put in safety measures?
Because it's
a double-edged sword.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of think it's just the right thing to do, kind of thing. Vehicles in some parts of the world have automatic emergency braking. So cars in front of you stops. In the United States, they wanted to mandate that would happen. Instead, the automakers came to a kind of memorandum of understanding that they would all do it voluntarily. And by 2022 or something like that. I would like to see the automakers all go, you know what? It's a good idea. We'll use our technology this way. Toyota will use their technology this way. Somebody else will use their technology this way. Rather than come up with the Society of Automotive Engineers, come up with a standard that requires this to be done because of this and this and this. And some vehicle manufacturers might go, that isn't how our system works. So now we have to re-engineer the entire car to get the thing to do what it's supposed to do, because nobody can ever come up with a rule that says, okay, if the car's not moving and it's running, it needs to shut off in, an hour or whatever the case is. We need to take another break. When we come back, we might play a little bit of trivia. Our phone number, though, 617-770-3030. I've been talking for like an hour, and, maybe it's time for you to talk. My name's John Paul. This is the Car Doctor program. You're listening on AM 950 WROL, the Spirit of Boston.
She's real fine, my 409. She's real fine, my 409. My 409. Well, I save my pennies and I save my dimes.
Giddy up, 409.
For I knew there would be a time.
Giddy up, 409.
And welcome back to the Car Doctor program on AM 950 WROL, the Spirit of Boston. Be good if I actually knew the name of it. I was trying out some car wax the other day. I'll look up and see what it is and find out what it is. But it's made by a company called 303. They make a lot of different products.
Okay, 409, 303.
Yeah, and it was a, and it's a spray-on wash-off car wax. So,
oh, I saw that.
Yeah. So you...
Did it work?
Yeah, it actually works pretty well. But it's not as easy as it as they make you
Never
think
as
it
easy.
Is. So you wash your car. You make sure your car is all nice and clean. And then, while the car is still wet-ish, so not dry, but wet-ish, then you spray it on. We'll spray it on. Then hose it off. Spray it on, hose it off. But then you have to go wipe it all down with a microfiber cloth. So kind of you've washed your car sort of twice. So you've washed it. You kind of make sure it's you got all the dirt off. So you kind of wash it, almost really dry it again. So you make sure it's all good and clean. And then if it isn't, you kind of wash it again. Then you sort of, what I found myself doing, because my car was kind of dirty, so I actually ended up washing my car, wiped it down, said, it's still a little dirty in places, washed those spots again, so now the car's kind of all wet again. Then I sprayed it, wiped it off, sprayed it, washed it off, then wiped it off. So I did the equivalent
That's
of wiping
a lot of work,
the car.
Man.
Yeah. But it did look good. It did come out nice and shiny, I will admit. So...
I have never, ever waxed a car in my life.
Wax on, wax off?
Never, ever.
Never?
I looked at that. I see people doing it. I'm like, no. I can't do that. I don't have patience.
Now, you're in good shape, and you play basketball.
Sure.
And you burn basketball. And you burn calories.
Yes.
But if you washed and waxed your car, you burn 900 calories.
Yeah, this I understand.
Yeah.
But I've washed my own car. I've just never waxed my own car because that's crazy.
Mm-hmm. My wife's car, which is black, she must have got behind something that was leaking.
Oh, boy.
And like a hydraulic line off a tractor trailer or something. And it made this kind of lines in the hood of her car and fenders. And I looked at it and I'm like, what's that? And it actually almost etched into the paint a little bit. So I went out with a high-speed buffer and buffed and polished and got the marks off. But because I'm not good at that, now...
You have swirly marks.
Yeah, you have swirly marks. And I haven't just gone back to it to try to remove the swirl marks. From one angle, it looks perfect. It looks great. Came out nice, but when the sun hits it just right, I see the buffer marks. Yeah, and I talked to one auto body detail shop, and said to them, "Can you get out swirl marks?" And he said, "Well, how'd you get swirl marks?" And I said, "Well, your stuff good." And he said, "Well, you did the right thing, trying to get it clean, but yeah, we can probably fix it." So. But I might try to fix it myself because you know, that's what I do. Okay. This is a multiple choice question, which makes it easy, sort of. And the rules are, we haven't played trivia in a long time, but if you've won at trivia in the last couple times we've played trivia, let someone else win. And the prize will be a AAA membership.
The hottest prize in the land. Everybody asked for them.
The inventor of the cruise control was invented by a homeless guy. Multiple choice. A blind man. A young woman. Or it was an alien invention that was left here. So who could be done by aliens? You never know. So who invented the cruise control? A young child? A blind person? A homeless guy? Or an alien? Or Dennis. One or the other. You know, one of those five.
If it was me, I wouldn't be here.
Okay. Well, I don't know if the inventor made any money at this either, but... So, the inventor of the cruise control was an alien, a young child, a blind person, or a homeless guy. 617-770-3030. 617-770-3030. I thought having multiple choice would be a good way to go, but too complicated, I guess. Let's talk to Tom in Weymouth. Thomas.
Yes, good morning, John.
Good morning.
I'm not Googling this. I thought I heard it once. It could be wrong. It was something, but a woman at one time. Just a good guess.
It was a wrong guess.
No?
It was a wrong guess.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's fine. Yeah, I just figured. I thought I heard. Didn't a woman do something on something with a car one time because it was
I think it was intermittent windshield wipers.
That's it. Very good.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. All right.
Well, thanks,
Tom. Good trip.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye-bye.
617-770-3030 is our number, 617-770-3030. So the inventor of the cruise control was a Romulan.
Yes, it is. What's your name?
Good. Okay. Some sort of alien. It was an alien invention left here by ancient aliens.
Where are you from, Rich?
A young child. Well,
all right,
we ruled that out.
Okay.
A blind man or a homeless guy. So if you know the answer, give us a call at 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030. And I mentioned this before, sons and daughters can give their dad 75 cars for Father's Day. That's how many there are, rare, stunning, exotic automobiles in Newport Car Museum's private collection for Father's Day. Every dad will be admitted free as long as another adult with him buys a ticket. Kids are welcome, too. They have specially priced tickets, so... so they have this Father's Day program going on. So that's always nice. And we have to have Gunther back on. He's back up here for the summertime, I assume. He lives in Newport when he doesn't live in some place in Florida. Interesting guy about Gunther. He literally owns a salt mine. So he owns the American Rock Salt Company. So when people say back to work in the salt mines, he really does go back to work in the salt mines. So Dennis is working on the phones. We'll see what's going on. Let's see. Let's go to in order, I guess. Let's try Rich and Newton. Rich.
Hello, John.
How are you?
Hey, long time no talk.
I know. That's a familiar sounding voice.
Yeah, Richmond and St. Patty, I'm still...
I was going to say, you're still in the battery business?
No, I'm not.
No?
No. My job got eliminated.
Oh, sorry to hear that.
Yeah, did Junior close up yet?
No, his shop in Hyde Park is open for... In fact, he called me last night on the ride home, and
yeah.
I asked him about that, and he said probably another 2 weeks before he moves everything down to Middleborough.
Yeah, because I heard you say that a couple weeks ago. Anyways,
yep.
I'm going to try the trivia question.
All right, go ahead.
I'm going to say a blind guy.
Modern cruise control was invented in 1958 by a mechanical engineer, Ralph Teeter, who became blind at the age of 5 in an accident. His idea was born out of the frustration of riding in a car driven by his lawyer, who kept speeding up and slowing down as he talked.
Really, John? I just took a wild stab at that. That was just a
It wasn't. You had a pretty good shot because it was either good. You know, we ruled out the kid, and it probably wasn't an ancient alien. So you had a 50-50 shot between blind man and homeless guy.
Yeah. So I think I go with the blind man. Why not?
Why not? Why not? So because the homeless guy probably wouldn't like Dennis said, the homeless guy probably wouldn't have been homeless after he invented it. So yeah.
Yeah. And I enjoyed your story there about the car dealership. I surrounded you. What a bunch of jerks.
Oh, yeah. Yep. And it's one of those things that you talk to people who are successful at selling cars because they treat people nice. That's all people look for, you know?
I want to say one thing quickly. Okay, when I bought my used Toyota 2010 and 13 with 12,000 miles on, okay, I hate buying cars, okay? But I went to Lexington Toyota, okay? It's a family-owned dealership.
Oh, yeah.
For 50 years, George Gray's place. John, I'm telling you, it was no BS, no nothing. I knew what I wanted, and you guys didn't try to steer me toward anything else.
Yeah, no, it's kind of interesting. I used to go into that dealership once in a while, and I saw the owner filling the Coke machine one time. And I said to him, what are you doing? I said, don't you own this place? And he goes, yeah. He said, but, you know, I'd rather have my guys doing stuff. And he says, it's just because I'm the owner doesn't mean I can't go do stuff like fill the Coke machine.
Yeah. I've been back there for service, and they give me a discount because they got the Northern very well.
Yep.
And they're always taking care of me. I've never had a problem there. But anyways, I'll give Dennis my address.
Yeah, stay right there, and Dennis will get your name and address down. Nice talking to you.
Oh, and tell Joanne I said hi to her.
I will. All right, you take care of yourself.
No, I don't know. Yes, thank you, buddy.
Yeah, I will. All right, take care. All righty. So Dennis will do that, and I'll talk to Bob and Lester. Bob, good morning.
Hi, John Paul. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. I'm the guy working on my wife's Jeep. I'm doing the front end.
Yeah, you got that piece back.
John Paul, I'm about to reassemble everything, and I'm putting the half shaft back on.
Mm-hmm.
So prior to that, I got to put in the inner shaft, but I'm having trouble inserting the inner shaft to inside the sleeve there. When I took the half shaft off on the passenger side of the Jeep Liberty, I pried it off, and they said the shaft might come out with the half shaft, which it did.
Yeah.
So now I want to insert the inner shaft back in the cavity, and it's been a couple of weeks, and now I'm having trouble putting it in. I might have stretched out the C-clip. Is that a common problem?
I mean, if it was stuck and it looks like it kind of changed shape, yeah, it could have.
And that's not allowing me to keep going. You know, I can only get so far.
Yeah. It's going in like half an inch or three quarters of an inch. It doesn't feel like it wants to go the rest of the way.
Exactly.
Yeah. It doesn't feel like it wants to snap in. Yeah.
No, it won't snap in.
Yeah. I mean, I hate to say to you, well, just, you know, tap on it till it, you know, goes in, because if the clip is really making it bind up, you could actually knock the clip off of it. So, yeah.
Right. I'm afraid of that. I was thinking of, I called around, nobody's got clips. I was thinking of just heating the clip up a little and try to close it back up. Is that
the only problem with heating the clip up, you're going to take away all of the springiness that makes the clip work.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's not a good idea.
No, okay.
Yeah.
I'll stay away from that.
Yeah.
Just kind of maybe press it.
Yeah, yeah, try,
it off,
yeah,
press
try to,
it
yeah.
Up a little.
Yeah, try to squish it down as much as you can.
Okay.
And I mean, even if you had to take the clip off and try to bend it a little bit and then put it back on.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, yes, I've done that.
Yeah.
John Paul, the other question, I'll let you go, is it's been a couple of weeks. I hope I'm inserting the right end into the transfer case. So when you look at the shaft, what, you know, they both have those ring clips. One of the shafts has manufactured, so the shaft is left and right. On the left side, you got the spring clip that's giving me a high time that won't go back in the cavity. There's a machine pot. It looks, I don't know if I'm putting the right end into the.
It's kind of hard to describe it. You know, I would. This is where I would.
You know, one side is the John Paul. One side is just the spline.
Yeah.
So I'm. You know, I'm. Yeah. From what I remember, the spline side is going to the.
Right.
The half shaft.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. It should just go. Yeah. It should just make perfect sense when you look at it. But if it doesn't, what I would recommend doing, go find, you know, go look up, you know, what year Patriot was this thing?
It's a 03 Liberty.
Yeah, a Liberty, rather. Yeah. Well, you know, go look up on YouTube, you know, Jeep Liberty half shaft, and just see what it looks like, just to make sure. I mean, if you're that kind of confused about it, because it should you know, it should, you should be able to walk up to it and go, oh yeah, this goes in here and this goes in here. It should kind of look that
easy. Exactly. Yeah. And that's, you know, like we said, I don't want to be banging that, so it's like I'm putting it in backwards.
Yeah, if you put it in backwards, the first time you drive it, it's going to fall out. So, don't do that. Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Take care. Bye bye.
Okay. Yeah. Bye bye.
We need to take another break, pay some bills. My name is John Paul. This is the Car Doctor Program. If you would like to call us, 617-770-3030. We'll be right back.
Well, I left Kentucky back in 49 and went to Detroit working on a...
Now, I have only been to California once in my life, and I did go by a California car wash, and it's just like that movie. There must have been 20 people that worked there, and it was, I mean, around here, you know, if you do go to a full-service car wash, there's like two or three people that wipe the car off, maybe. I mean, there was lots and lots of people that worked there. You know, my experience in Florida has been that there's a car wash right near my house. I go by there. That place is busy all the time. They must have five or six people out, but it's not, they're not quite as animated as they were at the California car wash. I think they really, the California car wash people, I think, really take it to heart and go over it. But interesting, one of the things I saw when I was in Florida, where my tin house is located, nearly everyone has a carport. And when there's a rainstorm coming, they move their cars out from under the carport. And I was like, and I saw people doing it. I'm like, what's going on? And they come out so the car, so it washes all the dust and pollen and crap off the car and natural car wash. And because I, all of a sudden I hear it starting to rain, and I see all these people getting in the car and moving the car out. And I'm like, what are they doing? Oh, okay. That makes sense, I guess. Let's talk to Bob in Danvers. Bob, good morning.
Good morning, John. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm fine. I have a couple of hopefully quick questions for you. My son's got an 014 Mustang GT.
Okay.
And just in the last week, he started noticing, like, when he stopped, the tachometer will drop from, say, an idle speed of 600 down to about 400 to 500 RPM. And the voltage, he said, is going down, coming up, going down. And that's all. I just talked to him really briefly, and that's all I know. It could be something else, but I think that's pretty much it. I was thinking of trying a fuel injection cleaner. I don't know. Using anything like that makes me a little nervous, though. You know, I just don't know what your... Any ideas, and would you use a fuel injection cleaner?
I would use a fuel injection cleaner. You know, some one of the ones that's been around for a while, like Tecron or B&G makes one.
Yep.
Seafoam is actually a pretty good fuel injection cleaner because okay. It does sound like maybe the idle control is sticking a little bit. I mean, I, you know, 2014, you know, probably a lot of that car still may be under warranty for the emissions control component. So if there is some fault with the, you know, idle air control or something like that,
yeah,
it may actually be covered. He's not getting any kind of a check engine light or anything like that, is he?
No.
Okay.
I told him, I don't worry buying gas, but, you know, change gas, use high, and he goes to Mobil, he said.
Yep.
So, well, that's supposed to be a good gas.
Yeah. What's considered top tier fuel, so, you know, Mobil,
yep,
Exxon, Citgo, even BP, I think.
Yeah.
That's going to help, but I think I would try the fuel injection cleaner first, just to see if there's any difference. And if not, what someone's going to, what will happen is kind of the way the system works. If you, if the engine's running normally and you pulled the vacuum hose off and made it run rough because it was running too lean, the idle control motor would speed up and hold the idle up, and but it sounds like maybe it could be sticking as you're coming off the throttle. There is, you know, from what I understand, there is, you know, I haven't seen any kind of problems with that. You know, there's no technical service bulletins that I know of. So where it's not generating a check engine light, I would try that. I think you're on the right track. Try the fuel injection cleaner first, see what happens. If not, either a good full service garage or the dealer to make sure, you know, like I said, some of these things may in fact be covered under the, you know, the 8-year, 80,000 mile emissions warranty.
Well, I picked the fuel injection cleaner, and it's this, I don't know the name of the company right now, but it's made by Stable Company.
Oh, okay. Well, Stable is a good product for what it's. I haven't tried their fuel injection cleaner. I'm a little old fashioned. I try some of the older names like Tekron that's been around since, you know, when you bought a fuel injected Corvette in 1950, whatever year it was, 58, it came with a bottle of Tekron.
And I have one other quick question, John. You helped me a couple of years going back with my Honda Odyssey van. It's an 06, and I was having trouble with the tires, the run, and that's another story, but you talked me off of the cliff on that one there. I also spoke to you then about a timing belt on this car.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote down what I think I remember from what you told me, and you said while they're in there doing the timing belt, you should have not only the belt, but the tensioner and the water pump. I thought there was something else. I thought there were four things you told me, and I, for the life of me, I may be wrong.
Well, the tensioner, the water pump, and if there is a, and I don't, and this is just kind of generically, if there is a timing, if there is any other kind of idler pulley or anything like that, or if there's a, camshaft seal or crankshaft seal, if there's any signs of seepage at all, that should be replaced too.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, some of them used to have cam seals that would start to leak over time, so it wasn't a bad idea to replace those. I don't remember on the Odyssey if that's the case, but definitely the tensioner and the water pump, only because you're in there, it's a fair amount of work. And it's important that the other important thing is that's a little bit of a tricky timing belt. So you want to make sure that it's somebody that's good and familiar with Honda products.
I know, because I went to my mechanic and he said, I don't even get involved in that.
Yeah.
So I know there's a guy on Route 1 South in Peabody, Larry.
Larry Rubenstein.
Yes.
Yeah. Go see Larry. Okay. In fact, he is just becoming a AAA approved auto repair garage.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Because I think the Honda dealership quoted me, and this is going back a month or two, $1,400.
Yeah, go see. Yeah, Larry kind of works the front, and his son works the back, and he's got a couple of good guys up there. So, yeah, go see Larry.
All right. Thank you so much, John. You've been a godsend.
Okay. Take care, Bob. Bye-bye.
Okay, you too. Bye now.
Let's finish up here with Rick in Boston. Rick?
Hey there. Hey. I got a question that something happened to my son the last few weeks. He's got about a 10-year-old Jeep Cherokee, and he had some work done with his mechanic, and he asked him just to check the thermostat for the radiator because he wasn't sure if it was working right or not.
Mm-hmm.
Well, fast forward about 2 weeks, he got done with work, showed up for a meeting, and when he went to park his Jeep, the hose blew and just dumped out the radiator fluid.
Yeah.
So he had it towed to his shop and that, and the problem was that the thermostat needed to be replaced and a couple other things.
Okay.
Now, is the thermostat something that just goes all back, can be, you're working fine, then all of a sudden it goes bad?
Yeah.
Or did the mechanic miss it when he looked at it the first time? Or just
no, a thermostat's one of those things that can work perfect, then the spring breaks in it, or it gets hung up, or it sticks. And that's why, I mean, back in the old days, we used to kind of recommend doing them, you know, pretty routinely as part of a normal cooling system service. Now you don't service the cooling systems as often, and they bury thermostats in truly, you know, obnoxious places to get to sometimes, so they kind of get overlooked. But yeah, a thermostat can work perfectly one day and not the next.
So okay, guys, I wasn't sure whether the mechanic
if you said to me the car came in with an overheating problem and they found a little bit of low coolant and said yeah, it's fine, then I'd say, you know what, he probably should have suspected the thermostat at the time. But if it's, you know, if it was one of those things that worked good and that it didn't, yeah, so thermostats do stick. Absolutely.
Okay, so just on a spring break or, you know.
Yep, yep. No, they just hang up. It's a little metal thing that slides up and down on a little shaft, and, you know, goop can build up. Corrosion can build up inside there, and it's just enough that one day it doesn't want to open. And when it doesn't open, the car overheats. That's all there is to it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. I'm just curious for that. Thank
all
you,
right.
Bye.
Take care, Rick. Bye-bye. Hey, look, you're not Sully.
I am not Paul Sullivan. I haven't been in this studio in months.
I know
how to get here.
I was going to say you. I saw you driving around. I saw you go across the street to the building over there. That wasn't the right door.
Yeah, I got lost.
You walked to the ocean. You came back.
Well, actually, it's a good thing. That means everyone's healthy and well.
That's right.
So it's all a good thing. But you know, I was listening to you talk about the folks down in Florida that pull their car out of the port there to wash their cars. I'm embarrassed. Growing up in Chelsea, when there was a rainstorm, my mother would give us a bar of Ivory soap and say, "Get out there, hurry.
Hurry.
Wash, rinse off, get in the house."
Yeah, I worked with a guy who his car looked immaculate all the time, and it never had any scratches or anything on it. And I said to him, "How come?" And he said, "Oh, whenever it rains, I go out with a bucket and soap and I wash the car in the rain." And back then, it's different now, but back then, the rain was a lot purer. We unfortunately get a lot of the acid rain. We get more acid rain on the East Coast than they do in other parts of the country because of all the dirty chimneys kind of out in the, you know, Chicago coming this way. There's a lot of acid rain, and acid rain leaves those water spots.
Sure.
Now, back when you were a kid in Chelsea, the air might have been a little cleaner.
Jeez, I hope so. My skin would be falling off if I tried to do it. I was surprised that Dennis said he never waxed a car. I remember in 1981, I had my first car. It was a 1971 Buick Electra, and the thing had dents, and I would actually wax that.
That's a 1,200 calorie car to wax. That's a big car.
It was a beautiful car. What a great first car to have.
That's a car that you felt protected. You had a lot of steel around you. So, me
and my friends fit in it fine.
I bet it was. What was the drive-in up near you?
Oh yeah, how many drive-in?
How many people could you get in the trunk?
Five comfortably.
Five comfortably in the trunk to sneak into the drive-in
all the time.
Is that the music?
Is the music man?
Yeah, that music, that piano man that the very best in Irish music is coming up with Bobby Brooks filling in for our buddy Paul Sullivan. Until next week, make sure you wear your seatbelt, drive safely, be good to your car. Next week we're going to be talking car sales a little bit. We're going to be talking to a woman who just came up with a book, How Not to Get Taken Advantage of When You're Buying a Car. Dennis needs to get a copy of that. And also, we're going to be talking to somebody from cars.com about the perfect car for Father's Day. Maybe your son can buy you a car. There you go. All right. Take care, everyone. Be good. Bye-bye.